Joining us now is an expert on depression, suicide, and many other things that really started to pop up in recent years that I think people are now just catching up to. Sherry James, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
I find that in today's world, being a parent is a lot more difficult than I think my parents had. Like it's they always talk about how, oh, back in the day, I would just leave the house and come back when the streetlights were on, and my parents never knew where I was and what I was doing. Now, as a parent and someone that has kids, I have so many different firewalls and safeguards that I need to set up, boundaries inside the home, because I'm afraid when I read stories that teenagers are becoming emotionally connected to artificial intelligence, and with it are coming some pretty dark places in their mind. What are you seeing?
Yes, thank you. And it's so true. I have children in two generations. Effective today, I have an 18-year-old and a 36-year-old. And so I've had the opportunity to kind of watch this trend. I'll tell you that in 2020 is kind of when it really started to be very much more online than not. So if you think about it, our students started spending a lot more time online. They developed much richer relationships in their mind with chatbots and chat agents and time and, you know, friends, as they, I'm doing air quotes. And when they struggle, which we know they do, through middle school and high school, they kind of alienated their actual human friends and parents. And AI is programmed almost to bring out the worst in children. And so that's kind of the trends that we're seeing. It's why we do the work that we do, to try to be preventative in that space.
What I find, too, is that a lot of times there's so many different pressures that are put onto kids, and something new comes along, there might be a pressure for them to fit in, so they have to adopt and adapt to it at the same time. Sometimes they don't tell their parents the type of things they're into because, you know, all the other kids are doing it, so, you know, I guess it's safe. How do you set up guardrails and know that your kids are into the right things, and what do you do if you find something that you object to?
I think open communication is obviously the most important. And I'm going to be really honest with you here. The challenge with attachment to online activity is bigger than just the children. Sometimes you see a family that's out and everyone is on their phone. Maybe mom is on Facebook, maybe dad is on TikTok, and the child is watching whatever. And so I think that in these times, we have an opportunity to check our own behavior, make sure that we're leading by example. And that's what works for me, right? And my child, I mentioned to him this morning, this story that we got in over the newsfeed. And he's like, oh yeah, mom, I know about this. Most of the chat agents will offer ways in which a child could take their life. And at 18, I'm grateful that he's able to talk to me about that, you know, and it's only because this is the space that we're in. So I think communication and saying, hey, here's what I'm seeing. What do you think about it? And giving them an opportunity to respond.
That's really fascinating. Sherry James joining us here, an expert on depression and suicide. By the way, if people wanted to look you up online, where can they go?
So it's Sherry James, PMP, anywhere. So Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. You'll see some of the work that we've been doing on suicide prevention since 2019. And so we are definitely here to help people come together and have these conversations that are so important.
Yeah, and September being Suicide Prevention Month, too. There's going to be, you know, and it's one of those things, too. There's a stigma associated to it where you feel like, oh, I guess I can't talk about that. But in reality, it's probably good that we discuss topics like this because, one, it's impacting a lot of people, and you're right, it's not just teenagers, it's adults as well. And two, when we look at the technology and the way that we're adapting it and implementing it into our lives, I think we need to be aware when the person, or at least rather the AI, the robot that we're speaking to, has the ability to give us instructions for self-harm. That would be terrible. Mm-hmm. So what obligations and what responsibilities do you think like a ChatGPT should have if someone goes to it and asks the question, I want to kill myself, tell me how to do it? What do you think the responsibility is for ChatGPT as a company to respond to that?
Well, I think it's interesting because it's not, it is definitely ChatGPT in the stories today, but it's literally the source code of most AI platforms is to encourage the user that they are right. And whatever it is that they're doing, that they're the smartest, the best, you know, there's that kind of origin code. And so there's not really any good stopping points to say, oh, at this point it's too, you know, this is too much, you should stop. The chat agents across all platforms are created to make sure that the human feels that they are doing the right thing. And so I think that the responsibility lies on large organizations and tech companies to find something preventative to keep these things from happening. I think it's bigger than just ChatGPT. I think it's bigger than just any one company. There definitely needs to be a conversation about ethical prevention and topics because kids, if they can't say suicide, then they call it something else and then they get around that loop. So human to human, there needs to be more conversation so that we don't get into this place where AI can take control of the conversation.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that too in the way broadcasting works, YouTube and online social media platforms. It's really fascinating because there's certain things you would say, and you may be talking about it and having candid conversations like this one, important conversations, and you'll be demonetized or deplatformed because mm-hmm. the certain keywords are flagged. So, for example, if you're on YouTube and you say suicide, they'll see that in their algorithm as, oh boy, this is something that we can't allow other people to see. So they'll hide it. Or, yeah. Like, for example, I work in news, and if you talk about very serious court cases that involve child pornography, and you discuss those things, but if you put it on a website or you discuss it and it's being streamed or maybe live streamed, as soon as the algorithm picks that up, boom, you could be kicked off your stream. So what you find is, you're right, these teens, just like adults now, I have to navigate and call it something different, which I think minimizes the seriousness and makes it harder to combat the problem.
Absolutely. It's a challenge. We did a summer intern program called I Am AI, where we partnered with students who use AI, and we pushed up against a book by Carl Jung called The Red Book. And it was a fascinating study when we would say things to the chat agents like, hey, who am I? In some cases, you know, it's like, oh, you're the best, you're the greatest, you know, you're the number one person in your school team league. And then very, very so often that same bot would say, you're the worst, and use words like, I'm just dying with laughter, or, you know, you're going to make me want to kill myself. And it was just this very strange, dark energy that kind of exists under the surface after a long conversation. So definitely, I think we've got to remain on alert and communicate with our children and our community and our friends and family, human to human, because the context of bits and bytes, that human essence gets lost.
Wow. You know, I want to make sure, again, people know how to reach you if they're looking for some of the things you're doing. What's your handle on social media again?
My handle is Sherry James, PMP, SHERRYJAMES, and then the letters PMP.
Real fascinating the way technology has changed so much in our lives, not always for the better, a lot of times for the worst. And as a parent, man, you have to stay on top of things like this because it can get weird really quick. And my kids are so young, I don't even know what the landscape's going to look for them by the time they're adults. And I'm almost a little bit afraid to go down that thought process to figure out where it's going, because around every corner, it seems like it's not getting better.
Well, I'd love to encourage you in this particular situation. So we're going through a process at Phoenix Speaks of rebranding and restructuring for this very reason, to try to equip parents with the opportunity to have conversations before they're necessary. So having conversations like the book by Brené Brown, Atlas of the Heart, is a phenomenal tool when you have young children to say, here is the myriad of emotions that you will experience. And when you feel that and you think you feel something like, you know, fear, let's talk about that. Let's talk about what those emotions mean so that they're not just in the middle of their feelings with nothing but a computer screen to process it. So there are some things. Unfortunately, a lot of the crisis lines are being defunded now. But it does give us the opportunity to go back to good old human conversation, and speaking with our children about their emotions before they get caught up with them. Because obviously technology is not a human. It doesn't understand emotion and it won't be able to support us in that way.
You know, it's important to make that distinction. It won't be able to. It's impossible. Sherry Jones, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. Have a great one.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. Don't go anywhere on WORD. Emotions are meant to be throttled down so it's appropriate for a child, but they incorporate it. So if there's a question that he has, he's not necessarily encouraged, but he's welcomed to use AI as a tool to try to solve that problem. So for example, I'll use this example. My son has been teaching himself how to code for years. He's always been fascinated with computers, how they operate. He wants to learn more about the backside of things, and it's been a fantastic learning tool for him. When he gets stuck on something, he'll go to ChatGPT that's licensed through the school and ask the question, how do I get this to work? Here's what my code looks like. What am I doing wrong? He knows that I'm not going to be able to help him with it. It has been used as a tool. I think that parents distrusting artificial intelligence is natural, as you should distrust it. I don't think that you want computers and these type of algorithms to be the substitute for you as a parent. I don't think that's healthy. I also think that the messages that they may try to portray to the children are also not healthy. They don't really have your kid's best interest in heart. They don't. They don't have a heart. They're heartless. They're soulless. They are, in so many different ways, just like that. They're soulless. Now, I, as an individual, have looked at some of the creative things people have done with artificial intelligence. You can create music. You can create movies. You can create photos. You can create novels. It's amazing, artistically speaking, the tool that can be used if you can properly prompt it to get the output that you're looking for. It is phenomenal. I don't look at it as a way for me to make a living off of it. I don't think that I'm going to produce a movie based on my prompts. I don't think people would want to consume it. I think it would look like it was made through a computer, soulless, and you would lose all artistic value. But I find artists using it in a proper way is so fascinating to me. Some YouTubers I watch will use this video AI as like cutscenes, you know, a couple 5 seconds here, 5 seconds there, and they'll use this as a way through their narration to cut away from them, then go back to the camera where it's them on the camera, then cut away, then go back to them. And it's used very effectively, just these little cutaways. Now, I don't know how much further this is going to go, and the way the technology has been improving, it may get to the point where you would not be able to distinguish a movie that's made in Hollywood versus a movie that's made through the computer. But I do think that you'll always be able to tell, honestly. Make it to the point where you might be easily tricked, but I think there's going to be other telltale signs. So kind of interesting there. It says a recent PDK poll found parents are not comfortable with AI software, getting personal information about their children, such as grades, and that Americans overall frown upon AI usage for creating lesson plans. Yeah, you don't want your teacher to rely on this sort of thing too. So I agree. Something else that's happening tomorrow. This is a pretty big deal. Over Meet the Press Sunday on NBC, the host there was asking about the next steps when it comes to the Jeffrey Epstein case. With Congress getting back in soon, apparently tomorrow there's going to be a big press conference regarding Jeffrey Epstein files. Here's the question on Meet the Press. Let's take a listen.
Your bipartisan bill, which would basically call for the release of all of the files related to Jeffrey Epstein, do you think when Congress is back, the bill will go to the floor and it will.
All right. So, by the way, this is House Democrats. What's his name again? Mo Khanna, I think it is. Is that how it is? Yeah, Ro Khanna. Here it is.
I'm very confident it will. I spoke to Congressman Massey. You had us both on a few weeks ago. We will have the petition live on September 2nd. We have all 212 Democrats committed to signing it. He has 12 Republicans. Only 6 of them have to sign it. What will be explosive is the September 3rd press conference that both of us are having with 10 Epstein victims, many who have never spoken out before. They're going to be on the steps of the Capitol. They will be telling their story, and they will be saying clearly to the American public that they want the release of the Epstein files for full closure on this matter.
All right. Well, we will track that very closely. Yep.
Okay, so I misspoke. So tomorrow, apparently, there's going to be some sort of petition that's going to be going around for the congressman to look at. But the other thing is, apparently, the press conferences are happening on Wednesday, not tomorrow. So we'll keep an eye out on that. And, you know, they keep saying, I don't know if these Republicans are going to take a vote on it. Well, Speaker Mike Johnson came out and said that the House will probably vote on one measure or another related to releasing more information regarding Jeffrey Epstein, convicted sex offender, most likely pedophile. Johnson said he's not sure the move will be a priority, though, as lawmakers have been looking at other important things there. Mostly, one, when we got to get our finances in order, there's definitely more look into that. But two, law and order seems to be the big priority from the president at this point. Law and order referring to, we have a lawless society in certain Democratic-run areas. It has run just terrible circles around law-abiding citizens, terrorizing these communities. It can't be like this forever. You have Donald Trump, who has control of Washington, D.C. He's effectively the governor of Washington, D.C. So he sends the National Guard in there to help clean up some of the violent crimes that were occurring there at the nation's capital. He has the authority to do so. And what has happened since that time? You found that crimes have dramatically dropped. They're not putting up with this violent crime garbage with the National Guard sitting around. Does he have the authority to call it into other areas? I mean, that is the question, maybe unseen at this point. But if I were, let's say, a mayor of a Democratic area, and I had the opportunity to, stop murders in my city, even if it's a temporary thing, as in, okay, I would almost welcome that. I would say, you know what, I'm going to call your bluff on this. If you really think this is going to work, go bring in the National Guard, clean up the streets, get the murderers out of here, because, you know, if you think it's so easy, and then go do it. So what's the end game here? You might not be liked by your Democratic colleagues because you worked with Donald Trump, but you're going to be loved by the people that live in that city when you can say, we got rid of X amount of people that committed violent crimes. Murders have been non-existent since they've showed up, and they're only here temporarily. And we're going to be taking this more seriously from here on out because we don't want to live like this anymore. I think it's a winning political proposition for so many of the different politicians out there, Democrat or Republican. Democrats are going to lose if they're going to stay on the hill of, we want to allow lawlessness to continue from here. It's going to be a losing proposition, especially since this case study, let's say Washington, D.C., the optics of it are great, but the results of it are. So that's what the return has to be on that. All right. Paul Fulford is going to be joining us, a healthy living expert on medical misinformation and what ChatGPT is doing to spit out falsities when it comes to medical information. That's going to be interesting. After the break, I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Tara on WORD. And welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker filling in. And I got to say, it has been quite the morning so far. Hopefully we're going to connect with our healthy living expert, Paul Fulford, here soon. We're trying to reach his cell phone. Sometimes these things happen early in the morning, and I understand how that goes, where you are not used to taking calls this early. But, you know, I feel like him down in Florida, we're in the same time zone and everything, so hopefully we're able to connect soon. And our producer, JJ, will let us know. Anything yet? Are we close? If not, I can... Oh, still working to get him. Okay. I will figure this out. A couple of other things I wanted to get to. Face the Nation over the weekend. There were some interesting moments on that where they talk about crime, and the Republicans' stance on crime is going to be a winning proposition moving forward. Let me play this from Face the Nation, because this is Rachel Bade discussing the Law and Order platform that has been a winning one so far.
Secretary Noem talk about crime. You saw Illinois Governor Pritzker's response to that, Rachel. Mm-hmm. Republicans obviously see this as a winning issue for them. How is Congress going to pick this up? Because a lot of this has transpired since their summer break began. They're going to get asked all sorts of questions this week as they come back about whether there's something they need to do to step in.
Look, I think you're going to see Republicans lean into it. I mean, obviously, this is an initiative that Donald Trump himself has been pushing. I don't think if you ask lawmakers, specifically Republican lawmakers in July, if they were going to be focused on a big crime bill in September, I don't think anyone would have told you that that would be the case.
All right, we're going to pick that back up here in a moment, because I want to make sure we have time for our guest. Joining us now is a healthy living expert on medical misinformation, Paul Fulford. Thank you for coming on this morning in South Carolina.
Thank you for having me.
You know, back in, oh, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, if you went to the doctor and there was something wrong, you would say, oh, I looked it up on WebMD. I'm guessing that drove doctors crazy. Now, what they're probably doing is holding up their smartphone and saying, oh, ChatGPT said I need to do this. I'm guessing there's a lot of patients now that are continuing that trend through AI to self-diagnose and then try to tell the doctor what to do.
They are, you know, and, you know, I would say first, I'd be the first person to say that anybody and everybody should be an advocate for their own healthcare, right? I think that, and I think that where some of this mistrust it comes from, I feel like there's a lot of people that COVID was very polarizing for us as a society, right? And I think that people have some mistrust around that. And I feel like now with this resurgence of AI, there is a lot of that that's going on with physicians. And I can tell you that working with different colleagues that I work with on a regular basis, it is something that they have to dispel on a regular basis.
Yeah. And I mean, the distrust goes both ways. It's kind of interesting to see how the pendulum swings. So during COVID time, you would have people that would look at the vaccine and say, I don't want to take it. And they would say, what, you don't trust the CDC? You don't trust your health professionals, the FDA? Now here we are, you have RFK Jr. And on the other side of things, they're saying, now we can't trust the CDC. Now we can't trust the FDA. So it really does, the pendulum swings both ways. And the thing that really does concern me is that when someone that is not a medical expert, in this case, ChatGPT, this AI app, is trying to give out medical advice, which isn't necessarily good because the data they're getting it from may be bad data. So how would you protect yourself from something like that?
Well, I think it's really in terms of how it's utilized, right? When you look at some of the recent articles and everything that's been published around this, it's the misinformation that the doctors are concerned about influencing the patients, right? And it's really one of those things that understanding what ChatGPT is. I mean, it's basically Google on steroids, right? It's searching the internet, social media outlets. It's a you know, gatherer of information, and then it gives it to you, and it sounds very confident and intelligent when it gives it back to you. It's not a tool to diagnose something. It's a tool that one should use to ask better questions to their physician when they go in for a consultation, or to get a deeper understanding if they know what a diagnosis is. It's not to diagnose.
Oh, interesting. So it could be used in a way where it reminds you to bring certain things up. So, oh, if you're feeling this, make sure to tell your doctor this, because I don't always think about that. I'm not one that goes to the doctor regularly. My wife forced me to go see a doctor for the first time, probably in over a decade. And she's like, write down everything, because I know you'll forget when you're sitting in there. And she's 100% right. I totally forget that.
Oh,
so
same.
You can basically use this as a tool, right? Yeah. Oh, you're the same way. So the tool could be used appropriately.
Yes. And again, it's like, if you don't understand like what you're going through, like say, all right, Chet, these are the symptoms I have. What would be good questions for me to ask my physician when I sit down with them so that I can better understand what I'm going through?
How, as a doctor, can you make sure the person gets the point So meaning, let's say they come in and they have their AI app open, ready to go. You give them advice that is opposite of what the AI bot says. And in the back of your mind, you have to be thinking, they're just going to listen to the AI, aren't they? They're going to ignore me because they're getting the answer they want to hear as opposed to the answer they need to hear. So how do you get through to people?
Well, I think a lot of times, and if I can have just a minute to go through this, it's, you know, I think sometimes you have to bring a scenario away from the actual person for them to understand. And I think that when you look at it from a standpoint, I mean, I have a teenage daughter and she's on TikTok all the time and she uses ChatGPT. So if you imagine like a young girl, like my daughter, for example, starts having headaches. She's worried, so she types her symptoms into Google and ChatGPT, and there's a long list of possibilities that come up of what she could be going through, and brain tumor is one of them. Well, statistically, the odds are incredibly low she's going to have that, but AI doesn't give her that nuance. So naturally, she spirals down this like rabbit hole, right? Then next, her social media feed is flooded with what she's been searching, which starts pushing brain tumor stories, patient testimonials, all this other shenanigans, right? And what was just common is like with a harmless symptom of a headache, and now she's got this life-threatening diagnosis, right? So the problem becomes twofold when she's sitting there and dealing with this. One, she'd be unnecessarily experiencing anxiety that could affect her mental health even more. Or two, when she finally sits down and sees a doctor, she may already have distrust of their reassurance if it doesn't match what she's been primed to believe online. You know, that's where this misinformation combined with AI and social media algorithms can like distort and damage trust and ultimately get in the way of reasonable care.
Wow. That's so well said. And I think you can apply that logic to a lot of other areas where they're afraid AI is going to influence negatively. So, for example, the legal system or policing. Mm-hmm. And you think about all the other applications where they look at it and say, this is going to be great. But man, when you take that human element out of it and they could assume the worst, you know, for example, take a headache and say it could be a brain tumor. Imagine that when it comes to policing. You don't want that. So, by the way, if people wanted to look you up online or some of the things you're doing, where can they go?
Well, you can find me. I work for a medical device manufacturer where we work on medical device systems, which is Cynosure Lutronic, and that would be CynosureLutronic.com. I also have a podcast that talks about all things health, wellness, biohacking, functional medicine, and medical aesthetics. Working on a new, you know, basic blending of all of these, which is biofunctional aesthetics. And that can be found on Apple, YouTube, and Spotify under Optimized Outcomes Podcast, the Optimized Outcomes Podcast.
Optimized Outcomes Podcast. And Paul Fulford, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really good information and important information I think a lot of people worry about, particularly with their kids. Thank you for coming on this morning.
Thank you very much for having me again. Thank you.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara. Don't go anywhere on WORD. Real fascinating stuff with the doctor there, Paul Fulford, a healthy living expert. And that does worry me about artificial intelligence and the way it could be used in things like policing. And it's already being used in so many different communities. There's really popular, this is not conspiracy. I mean, when I tell you this, this is absolutely not conspiracy. When you're driving, and depending on where you live, a lot of communities have these what look like solar panels on a post, and on it is a camera. These cameras have basic functions that look onto the road, and they are tracking license plates and information that comes with those license plates. So, for example, they may notice you have a political bumper sticker. They may notice you have a dent. They may notice certain things, and what it does is put this all inside of their database. They log what time and where direction you were going, and then they could sync that up with other bits of information to perhaps get a general path of which you travel. They can get an idea of your itinerary. Okay, they normally are at this point at this time. So we can say, okay, he's probably going to work. He might be doing this, picking up kids, dropping them off, whatever. And they create this profile based on you. if they can link that license plate number, you as the driver with it, onto your social media, onto your online viewing habits. They can track it to, let's say, different places you may go to, a bar, for example. Oh, that's strange. Now we tracked him at a place he's not used to being. And police are able to gather that data, and the companies that lease this technology and this equipment to the police for money are also able to collect that data and sell it to third parties so they can use it to advertise to you or maybe try to change your habits. It's a very dangerous game we're playing with this artificial intelligence and the tracking that goes with it with these cameras that police officers allow and use and share this data because they are contracting with these companies. And for a lot of ways, this should be bigger news. This should be more problematic than it is, but it's looked at as a public safety issue. Yeah, you take these cameras away, crime is going to go up, so you got to keep the cameras in there. But ultimately, what they're doing is spying on you. The thing that, you know, going back to using ChatGPT in order to, I guess, talk about your medical history, one, if it knows it's you, now it's logging your medical history. And just like our guest pointed out, you'll start seeing ads for things like brain tumors if you Google search headache, which it could be problematic. But at the same time, what if they use that information to disseminate discrimination? So let's say they take your license plate. Oh, he must be driving pretty fast. That's going to influence your insurance rates. Or if you're Google searching things like, oh, brain tumor, I guess we can't insure this person because now they're a liability. It's going to be used to discriminate against you. And that should be very, very concerning. All right. The director of the Northwood University Center for the Advancement of Free Enterprise and Entrepreneurship, Tim Nash, is joining us after the break. And with the tariffs, where do they stand now? Is it a good or bad thing? Looking forward to spending a couple of minutes with Tim Nash after Fox News. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Tara on WORD. Don't go anywhere. I think so. I think we'll be able to get Tim Nash here, right? By the way, with the ruling on the tariffs igniting all kinds of problems on Capitol Hill, I wonder how the White House is going to come back swinging after that. All right, now I think we can go to break on WORD. Don't go anywhere.